Welcome to This Week in Money. I'm Jim Goddard. Today, Ross Clark from chartsandmarkets.com runs down the major markets. Apparently, all that upward momentum the past few weeks has worn out. He comments on crude, the U.S. and Canadian dollars, and gold. Publisher of the Trends Journal, Gerald Celente, says the world was just asking for trouble when it allowed China to join the World Trade Organization. Now China is experiencing a painful economic downturn, something the communist government doesn't know how to handle. President of InsideTrackTrading.com, Eric Haddock, gives us his take on the cycles that affect gold, the U.S. dollar, and the stock markets. Plus, at the end of the show, we'll have a company showcase update from Recyclico CEO Zarko Maselgia. We'll talk to Ross Clark right after this.
Recyclico, making lithium ion last forever. Recyclico's patented recycling process achieves up to 100% recovery of battery metals from lithium ion batteries for electric vehicles, including cobalt, lithium, nickel, manganese, and aluminum. Recyclico Battery Materials Incorporated trades on the TSX Venture AMY, on the OTCQB AMYZF, and Frankfurt ID4. For more information, visit recyclico.com or phone us at 778-574-4444. Recyclico, making lithium ion last forever.
Welcome to This Week in Money, the source for market opinions. Here is Jim Goddard.
My guest is Ross Clark from chartsandmarkets.com, where you'll find insightful market commentary and timely technical analysis. You can find him on Twitter at ChartsByRoss. Today, Ross is reporting from the beach. Lucky man.
Yes, you know, and when the weather's good and the kids want to do something, we just bend the rules a little bit here. But, you know, most of what was happening during this week really ran its course through Friday, and now it's a few things of note, I guess, that we should make bring up here. We've been talking about starting in June, early July, just about the divergences and how the FANG group and the artificial intelligence stocks have just been running that they ran out of steam, and then as we got into July, some of the really small cap ones that made those exceptional moves. I mean, it was nothing for stocks to move 100-200% in a couple of weeks get way overdone. So that's the tail end of these big exponential moves, tends to bring in some of the small cap plays, and that's what we saw. So as momentum has been lost, we looked at it and said, well, the S&P and NASDAQ, if we look at them historically, the deep corrections, at least the first ones, tend to come back down to the 20-week moving average. And as of Friday, the S&P and the NASDAQ have done that. And if we look at the hourly charts, as it was sort of mid-morning here, getting some just massive oversold readings. Markets look to be just ready for a decent bounce in here. The 20-week averages are a normal spot to start seeing a bit of a thrashing around. So maybe next week becomes a little choppier than this week. This was just downside bias day after day. The markets would start reasonably well, and by midday we're eroding away, and until the tail end here of Friday, when markets came back a little bit into the close. But I think the worst part of this initial decline should be behind us right now. We'll see what kind of a bounce we get out of here. You really want to see it make back 40 or 50% of the losses, and that's what we'll be looking at to monitor as far as the broad indices are concerned here.
What's happening with crude?
Crude oil has spent the week correcting back down. We're 7 weeks into what has been a pretty good run. Closed off the week, I think, just a little over $80 when I saw it. And the upside there, the bias is still reasonable. I think you start to run out of steam as we get towards the latter part of the month. Crude is, you know, we look at it, it's been doing exceptionally well with a poor equity market that we've had for this last 3 or 4 weeks. So, you know, I think a little bit of buoyancy here, pause in equities, and probably get the crude oil up and pushing through the $83 high that we saw in the early part of the week. There's good support at $79. There's no question about that. But on the upside, you know, hopefully there's about 2 weeks left in this run before we might get a deeper correction.
What's going on with gold?
Gold, well, the modeling here was that we would be set to make some kind of a low in the early to mid part of this, August. And really the item that I'm watching closely, for all that the gold and silver markets are nicely oversold and ready for a reversal, was the first week with a higher high, that would be sort of the indication that we're turning. But the big problem here, as far as we're concerned with a lot of these commodities, is that the U.S. dollar has been just so strong. It was down under 100 on the index, you know, not too many weeks ago, and has rallied up to the 103.5. It's up against the 50-week moving average, which is a reasonable resistance area. But until we see the dollar roll over, I think we're going to have trouble getting a decent rally out of gold and silver. It might get a bounce, but if it's still fighting that U.S. dollar strength, I wouldn't be looking for too much in there. So the 103 and change is resistance level on the dollar index. I think if you see it back under 102, you could say that momentum has been lost. And then take a pretty hard look at the precious metals.
Anything happening with the U.S. and Canadian dollars?
The Canadian dollar, I don't have the notes on me right now, but when I looked at it earlier in the day, it was starting to become oversold enough to get a decent bounce in here. You know, you're probably looking at maybe a center. So, as I say, I don't have any other notes on that. The other thing we've been fighting here is that you've got the strength as far as the U.S. interest rate market is concerned. You know, the 10-year note is back up to 4.25%. The long bond is at 4.4. And that's right back to the highs that we had in October of last year. So when you've got these rising rates in the States like this, it's pretty hard for other currencies, including this Canadian dollar, to put on much on the upside.
What's on the anything else file?
Well, there's one item that I sort of overlooked. I didn't monitor it on a regular basis. Is the Hindenburg, which is a measurement of the internals of the stock market, takes a look at the number of 52-week highs and 52-week lows. And when you get a large number of both, you get more than 2.5%. New highs and new 52-week lows, together with a McClellan oscillator being in the right position and with the New York Stock Exchange Index being in a rising trend. We had all those pieces together back on August the 8th, and that produces a Hindenburg, which historically, you know, there's a high percentage if you get a good market break once you've had that Hindenburg. The last one, it was in April of 2022, the previous one in December of 2021. Both of those were worthwhile sales. So, you know, we'll keep an eye on the rally here. If we get this decent bounce, as far as the markets are concerned off the 20-week average, we'll take a look and see if those pieces start to fall into place, as we come off some kind of a low here. But bit of a shame we didn't catch it in the beginning, but you know, and put that on the list of items to have near the top.
Ross, thank you so much for the update.
Pleasure to be with you, Jim.
My guest has been Ross Clark from chartsandmarkets.com. You can find him on Twitter at chartsbyross. Coming up, Gerald Celente, next on This Week in Money.
Always consult your investment professional before making any investment decision. Don't miss out. Stay informed. Receive the HowStreet.com weekly recap with thought-provoking podcasts, radio, and articles delivered to your inbox. Sign up for the HowStreet.com weekly recap on our homepage at HowStreet.com. This Week in Money is archived online at TalkDigitalNetwork.com.
Welcome back. My guest is Gerald Celente, publisher of the Trends Journal, available online at trendsjournal.com. He's speaking to us from historic Kingston, New York. Gerald, it's been a while, but it's great to have you back on This Week in Money.
Thank you for having me.
Can you tell us a bit about the Trends Journal, how many pages are in it, how people can sign up?
It's over 160 pages a week. No ads. Nobody tells us what to do. And it's digital, but you could print out what you want, and you can listen to the whole Trends Journal as well. And for the grand total of $2.86 a week. We're giving people everything we can give them. There's no magazine in the world that gives you in-depth socioeconomic and geopolitical trends analysis and trend forecasts. The media today is nothing more. I call them their prostitutes. They're media whores that get paid to put out by their corporate pimps and their government whoremasters. You only hear one side of the story, and it's the side that George Carlin used to say, it's one big club and you ain't in it. So we're political atheists. We don't take sides on anything. We put the facts, we give our analysis, and we give our forecasts, and then you think for yourself. And we also give entrepreneur opportunities, because there's a lot going on that's going to be changing the world. Matter of fact, we even have separate sections in technocracy, to high-tech science, to AI, on and on and on. So they're also very troubling times. We're headed now, as we're forecasting, for the worst geopolitical and socioeconomic crisis in modern history.
What are some of the major trends you're watching?
Well, let's take on the economic front. Look what's going on in China. Their economy is going down the toilet. They're in deflation. You look at their export numbers, look at their import numbers, way, way down. Look at the people, the big firms that are going broke, bankruptcy, all these big, huge apartment firms, apartment builders. Here's the story. By the way, tracking trends is the understanding of where we are, where we're going, where we are and how we got here, so you can see where we're going. And by the way, nobody else does this. They don't teach trend tracking. One of my books, far better than Megatrends Time Magazine, Trends Journal, international bestseller. They don't teach trend forecasting at Harvard, Princeton, Yale, Cambridge, Oxford. You know why? Because they don't know how. Yeah, but here's a history lesson. So now we're going back to the China. Okay, so what happens? When China was brought into the World Trade Organization, you could look at their GDP from 1970 to 2001. They officially came in 2 weeks after 9/11, so nobody even paid any attention. And everybody forgot about the Battle of Seattle. And that took place in Seattle in 1999 when they were going to bring China in under the Clinton administration, who brought them in into the World Trade Organization. And so over 40,000 people in Seattle took to the streets when they were having the World Trade Organization meeting in Seattle in protest of China coming in. But of course, again, the prostitutes, all they covered was these agents provocateurs all dressed in black and in perfect shape, smashing windows and burning a couple of cars. So people's minds are off this because the Americans knew at that time, you bring China into the World Trade Organization, all these big manufacturers, high tech to high heavy industry, are going to get everything they can made over there because they got cheap labor. So now we're going back to the trends, how it began. You look at China's GDP from 70s to early 2001, almost a flat line, going up a little bit. Boom. They come into the World Trade Organization. All the manufacturers go over there to get the cheap labor. They boom. They had a housing boom, infrastructure boom, business boom like nothing in modern history. With all big booms comes a bust. The greedy overbuild, the Evergrande that filed for bankruptcy wanted to get grander, all of them. So now what happens to make a bad situation worse, China starts the COVID war. In celebration of the Chinese Lunar New Year, the year of the rat in 2020. They locked down for 3 years. They destroyed the lives and livelihoods of hundreds of millions of people. It's not coming back. It's not coming back anywhere. Look at the office building bust. Oh, we won't talk about that, Salenti. You've only forecasted this when they started locking everything down. Hey, isn't it fun to go visit San Francisco? I left my heart in San Francisco. You go out on the street at night. You left your life dead in San Francisco. And who brought it to you? After the Chinese lockdown, then Italy lockdown, who's the next to lockdown? The geeks. The geeks lockdown. Oh, yeah, that guy Dorsey with the beard that used to have Twitter that's now X. He was going to take a trip in February 2020 to South Africa, cancel the trip. Don't want to get COVID. And everybody, all you workers, you can't come into work. Work at home. Work at home. Now people are working at home. And they say to themselves, here, you ready for this? 97% of America was locked down in April of 2020. So now people are month after month after month, they're staying at home and they're saying, holy Christ, I've been getting up at 5 o'clock in the morning, commuting an hour and a half each way. I'm not doing this anymore. Now I'm the tenant and saying, listen, stay home a couple of days a week. I don't need all these floors. I don't have to pay all this rent. Oh, it's summertime. People don't have a clue what's going on. Oh, Fitch and Moody downgrading the United States credit rating and the banks, all the banks. Oh, another about dozen banks this week. You know, but to hear about what happened at Gilgo Beach 20 years ago. Yeah. And Britney Spears got a divorce. Yeah, that's what the people know. They don't have a clue what's going on. And the war ramping up in Ukraine, this thing is going down big. And people better prepare for the worst. And I don't give financial advice, because when you get to gold, it's a very simple story. The only reason gold prices are low is because interest rates are high. End of story. When they start lowering interest rates, the dollar's going to weaken and gold prices are going to go up. And that's going to be the beginning of the bust. And we had forecast back in May that the markets would begin to decline in early September. We're a couple of weeks off. And they're going to go down in October, because reality is going to hit the street. It's a recession in Europe. Oh, no, I'm sorry. They just came out with a GDP number and it was flat this time. What, are you kidding me or what? Germany. What, they had two quarters of negative GDP and now you tell me it's flat. The fourth largest economy in the world. China, the second largest economy in the world. You look at their numbers. So we're in serious, 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 serious problems.
Would you be surprised to see stock markets move higher into 2024 or even 25?
No, I won't at all, because they're going to start lowering interest rates. The street is giving it a 50-50 chance that when the bankster gangsters meet again in September, they're going to keep them flat. So it's, if they do raise them another 25 basis points, that'll drive up interest rates again. People will be bailing out of the stock markets to go into safe money markets and treasuries. I mean, you're getting 5% on your money. What am I going to gamble it for? So that's going to bring the markets down. And the markets are overvalued. They should have gone down when they were going down big time in March, but you had the whole AI boom. And that boosted everything up again. And again, you're looking at the numbers. The numbers aren't great. Again, we only have a couple of companies running the show. Oh, what did Walmart do? What did Home Depot do? What did Lowe's do? Remember once upon a time, there used to be hardware stores, grocery stores, stationery stores, and drug stores. Now they're all chains. What are the chains doing? So again, it's all in the numbers. And the numbers we're forecasting that investors are going to jump back into short-term bonds as rates rise. End of story.
The U.S. dollar continues in a trading range. If the dollar breaks down, would stock markets and commodities likely head higher?
No. When the dollar goes down, the country is going to go down. Because when your currency is weak, inflation goes up. It costs you more to buy stuff. And again, the inflation numbers are cooked. You'll go to John Williams' shadow stats. They're more than twice the number the government's putting out. And what did your car insurance go up? About 17%? The cost of an automobile? College? I mean, one thing after another. Your core inflation is still very high when you put the real numbers into it. Now, we think the markets are going to decline, but again, it's a gambler's guess because the markets are rigged. They got a game plan called the plunge protection team. I mean, who are you talking to? What am I, 6 years old? What do you mean plunge protection team? How about market riggers? So you never can tell. I thought the markets would have crashed in 2012. They didn't teach me about a BS line called quantitative easing and negative and zero interest rate policy. So they'll make up anything they can. They're money junkies. They're money junkies. They kill for money, just like any other junkie. So you don't know what they're going to do to keep it artificially high. But again, we are forecasting a banking bust when the office building bust happens. This is real. You have office vacancy rates on average of the 10 largest cities in the United States near 20%. About 26% over there in San Francisco. Oh, you want to go shopping in L.A.? Oh, you like what they did in Nordstrom with the gang of 50 going in there and robbing the place right in front of your eyes? None of this happened before the COVID war. We warned about it. We said when people lose everything and have nothing left to lose, they lose it. They lost it.
Is the real rate of inflation signaling higher interest rates?
Again, the guess on the street is 50-50. It's a guess. It's a guess. Because they don't know what's... Remember, you can't go by what they say. Because this is the same clown show that didn't begin to raise interest rates until March of last year, saying that as rates were going up in 2021, that it was only temporary and then transitory. I'm not making that up. So how can you believe anything they say and they keep giving you mixed story so you don't know what they're going to do?
Gold remains in a trading range. Is $2,000 gold enough to implement gold-backed currencies?
The gold-backed currency doesn't have to go by the price of what gold is or where it's going. It has to go with the countries that are going to want to solidify their economies as things go berserk, which they're going to do. And they're going to say that they have their currency backed by gold, and that's why it's worth investing in. And again, it's very important to understand that with the United States interest rates so high, you're seeing emerging markets submerge deeply because they have dollar debt. And again, you're seeing more investment going into treasuries and money markets. You know, so the emerging markets are going to submerge really deeply. So again, it's hard to say what the game plan is going to be, but we forecast they will lower interest rates in the run-up to the presidential reality show in 2024. They do it all the time to keep the clown in power in power.
What's really going on with China's economy?
As I mentioned earlier, it's going down big and bad. They overbuilt. And again, this happens all the time. When there's a boom economy, they bust. And China had a boom economy, the likes of which we've never seen in the 21st century. Look at their infrastructure compared to the third world infrastructure of the United States. Look at all of the developments all over. They overbuilt. And now with their zero COVID policy, they kill the economy. It's going to be decades before it comes back.
With debt bubbles everywhere, is money being constricted?
I don't know if it's constricted or not, but we're forecasting they're going to come out with digital cash or digital trash and get rid of the dirty cash. So because as things get really bad, they'll make up anything. You know, like Saddam Hussein and weapons of mass destruction, people believe that lie. And then all of a sudden they'll say the banking systems were hacked by the Russians. They lost all your money. We're coming out with a digital currency. They'll make up something. They're going to come up with another currency to whitewash and try to get rid of all their debt load. And they, when they come up with a digital currency, they're doing it so they know every penny you spent, where you spent it, what you spent it on, and most importantly, so they can steal your money in the name of taxes. Because politicians never work a day in their life. So all they want to do is keep working for free and all the bureaucrats that support them get jobs.
Are residential and commercial real estate markets a concern?
We're not big concerned about residential. The difference with this time when all of the prices went up in residential was that people had money to buy the buildings and the houses rather. And this time is different than the panic of 08. By the way, the domain name that I took out in 2007, calling it the panic of 08, because they had all those subprime mortgages. I remember back in 2000, from 2003 to 2007, where I am in upstate New York, every day going over the bridges, Rhinecliff, Poughkeepsie, all the bridges up here, I'd always see on the parkways, they're not parkways, but you know, the big routes, long trailer trucks with prefabricated houses. They were building like crazy. You don't have a job, deep in debt, don't worry about it. Sign over here. It's called a subprime mortgage. We don't have that this time. So you're going to see prices go down to some extent, but we don't see a big crash in the housing market. Apartment complex is differently because that's by the bigs, and they overbuilt on that one. But not on single-family homes, not that bad. But we see a commercial real estate bust going on in the malls, and again, the office building bust that we forecast in March of 2020.
Is it fair to say rigged markets and Agenda 2030, where you will own nothing and be happy about it, are designed to wipe people out?
I don't know about it. You know, I don't know enough about that other part of but it's not about wiping people out. It's about the greedy wanting more. You go back to when they locked down everything during the COVID war. From 2020 to 2022, the billionaires got $27 trillion richer as restaurants and dry cleaners are drying up and businesses are going out of business and people are suffering. The stock market is controlled by 1%, owns 54% of the equity markets. The 10%, when you put it together, own over 90%. So the plantation workers of Slavelandia have nothing, and all they want to do is keep making more money. They don't give a penny for peace. And all they do is it's a crime syndicate. Look, when I was a young guy, there were no private equity groups, venture capitalists, or hedge funds. It is all a scam, and the scam's going to come down. But again, all they're interested in is making more money and stealing as much as they can from the plantation workers of Slavelandia, which used to be called the middle class.
Is the depopulation agenda well underway?
I don't know if it's a depopulation agenda or not. It's just stupidity, the poisoning of the planet in so many different ways. Look at the forever chemicals are in 45% of American water. You know, where I am in the Hudson River, floating with PCBs thanks to General Electric. I mean, the water, the air, the food. You want to eat more ultra-processed food? Is that a depopulation problem? Yeah, I'm reading the Wall Street Journal this morning, and it's saying how difficult it is for women, families now, because the cost of daycare centers has gone up so much. You know, once upon a time, people hate me for this. You look at what's going on. The obesity rate in America, 42%. 42% of the people are obese. 70% are overweight. Look at the crap they're eating. You know why? Mothers stop raising their children. Are you putting them in a daycare center with other screaming crazy kids? Oh, you forgot when you were a kid and you were out of your mind? If my mother didn't raise me, may my soul rest in peace, I'd be dead. I got a stranger raising me and feeding me crap food, and you're complaining that the cost is going up? When they put women into the workforce, that was the beginning of the end of unionization. I'll never forget, 1970, I was going for my master's. I was going to get a master's degree in industrial relations. That's gone, all finished. Instead, I got it in public administration because I saw this thing's going out. So what they did is it's supply and demand. It's supply and demand. So now you have the workforce filled with people making very little wages. And the women aren't raising their children. They're drugged out of their mind and blimped out. So people hate me for saying that because once upon a time, since the beginning of time, women raised their children rather than putting in some bunch of other screaming crazy kids and feeding them crap. You know, my mother, again, you know, cooking fine Italian food of all the aunts. All the cousins loved Aunt Marie because she cooked them. The women used to cook great food for the kids. Now it's ultra-processed crap. So you're talking about climate change. You're talking about depopulation. It's right in front of your eyes. Oh, by the way, according to the CDC, 61% of the 1 to 17-year-olds that were hospitalized for COVID, 61% were obese. Again, my generation, go back, look at 1969, look at the Woodstock. All the guys and a lot of the girls don't have their shirts on. Everybody's thin. Now they complain because somebody's taking up two seats in an airplane and it's only one person. So the whole society is going down in front of our eyes.
Well, back when we were kids, your mom would just say, go outside and play. And you played until you were called in for dinner. And now the kids sit there in front of a video console.
Yep.
Yeah.
And they're dead. They're walking down the street dead. I see little infants on these video things. Again, you know, if we don't change the course, they got it wrong in the King James Bible. They say the meek shall inherit the earth. The geeks have inherited the earth. Crappy synthesized music. And look at what it's gone from. Ragtime to swing to R&B or rock and roll to Motown to now it's one bad rap and Notown. Everything synthesized, crapped out. I got to hear some guy rapping. Save your crap, man. I want to have a good time. Hey, Jimmy, you know, I put on a concert when I was the number two guy running a major trade association. I put on, after our trade show, I put on a concert for Ella Fitzgerald in Atlanta. Took over the Superdome and put one on for Dionne Warwick. When there was style and grace and dignity. And now look at it. It's slobville everywhere you go. If we don't have a renaissance, it's the end of life on earth. You got a bunch of clowns running in. Who's you? You're the little Trudeau you got up there. Little nobody of a daddy's boy. Look at America. The guy out of his mind, Biden. Mitch McConnell, the Republican, dead in front of you. Dianne Not-So-Feinstein, gone, finished. Little Chucky Schumer. Lindsey Graham. One clown, little Macron, that got sown in France. The world is being destroyed in front of our eyes. And the people are doing nothing to change it. I'm doing everything I can. I launched Occupy Peace. I spoke at the Humanity for Peace rally at the United Nations 2 weeks ago. And sadly, Scott Ritter was there as well. Sadly, hardly anybody showed up. Scott Ritter, myself, and other top people. Talking for peace, who cares? Let's send more weapons. Oh, yeah, as Maui rots and the other... We could care less about them. $137 billion to keep bloodying the killing fields. Hey, that's fine. Why, how dare you be against the war?
As Trump gets more indictments, are people waking up to the corrupt lawlessness of people in places of power and the destruction of the rule of law?
No. When I was a kid and I started learning about stuff, my father, may rest in peace, would say, son, take it easy. People have little minds. All the things we're talking about. What's going on with the banks, Moody's, and Fitch? What's a Moody's and a Fitch? They wouldn't know what we're talking about. They have no idea how the Ukraine war began. We wrote about it as it happened when the United States overthrew the democratically elected government of Viktor Yanukovych back in 2014. Never heard the line that NATO would not move one inch further after the Soviet Union broke up. There were 16, 31 now. Have no idea what a Minsk agreement is. Do they care about the people starving in Sudan? Do they know what's going on in Niger? They don't have a clue. People aren't waking up. Only the people that are listening to you, subscribe to our magazine, and others in our field know what's going on. I don't waste my time talking to dimwits.
Is historic Kingston, New York at risk of becoming a 15-minute smart city?
No, Kingston, you know, it's very sad. This place was my favorite place at one time. And I loved it so much. But after the COVID, everything changed. Businesses went out of business. There's no nightlife anymore. And it's really libtard land. One of my tenants closed down when I had a Peace and Freedom rally. Peace and Freedom. Judge Napolitano, Scott Ritter, Gary Null, and others, Phil Giraldi. They closed down because they called it Peace and Freedom rally. They called it a political rally. So it's libtard land. Same thing with Woodstock. Well, the people that used to promote peace, more weapons of war. They're cowards. Anybody that wants to support war, here's what you do. You support the Ukraine war, go over there and fight. Send all your money, take your kids, your wife, your transgenders, you all go over there. If you support the war, go fight or shut your mouth.
What are the prostitutes pushing?
Oh, they're going to be pushing COVID again and fearing everybody out. And they're going to be pushing more hate Russia, hate China, hate North Korea, and love war.
Are food and water trends to be concerned?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Again, not because of the shortages so much, but because of the poisonous of them. Look what's going on right now. Mexico doesn't want to import GMOs. $5 billion a year of American corn they import for livestock. They don't want to do it anymore. America is fighting against them because they don't want GMOs. How dare they not take GMOs? I mean, that's the attitude.
Hasn't research found that genetically modified corn, after three or four generations, starts affecting male sperm production?
The male sperm production, this is the data, anybody could look it up, by 2045, zero. So I guess that's why the transgender thing is becoming so big. And that's why there's no fight, because they've lost their manhood. I'm a fighter. I'm a warrior for the Prince of Peace.
How does AI, artificial intelligence, work, and is it a real threat?
Oh, it works. It works for very certain things, and this is not the dot-com bust. This is real. It's going to replace a lot of jobs. And in a lot of ways, it's going to do a good job. In a lot of ways, it's going to do a lousy job. I mean, you look at the Internet Revolution. I remember when it happened in the early 90s. I mean, look at how the Internet has changed worlds for the better in a lot of ways. But we were talking before about the people being dead on their cell phones and addicted to the stuff. So the same thing with AI. There's the benefits and the pluses, but this is real. And Goldman Sachs estimates there's going to be about 400 million jobs lost.
How can people subscribe to the Trends Journal?
Oh, they could go to trendsjournal.com, trendsjournal.com. And again, we have a whole section each week on AI. And one of our top trends for 2023 was AI, we own you. And so to answer your question, it's all there. And then again, we're giving people everything we can, because these are very, very precarious times ahead. And we want to help people prepare, prevail, and prosper to do all they can to see the current events forming future trends. So we're giving them history before it happens. It's at trendsjournal.com, trendsjournal.com. And if you don't like the magazine, 30-day money-back guarantee, so you lose nothing. And by the way, it costs less a week than one lousy cup of coffee if you go out and buy it.
Gerald, thank you so much for being on This Week in Money.
Thank you.
My guest has been Gerald Celente, publisher of the Trends Journal, online at trendsjournal.com. He was speaking to us from historic Kingston, New York. Coming up, Eric Haddock, next on This Week in Money.
Recyclico, making lithium ion last forever. Recyclico's patented recycling process achieves up to 100% recovery of battery metals from lithium ion batteries for electric vehicles, including cobalt, lithium, nickel, manganese, and aluminum. Recyclico Battery Materials Incorporated trades on the TSX Venture AMY, on the OTCQB AMYZF, and Frankfurt ID4. For more information, visit recyclico.com or phone us at 778-574-4444. Recyclico, making lithium ion last forever.
This Week in Money is archived online at talkdigitalnetwork.com.
Welcome back. We're speaking with Eric Haddock, CEO and President of InsideTrackTrading.com. He's speaking to us from Central California. Welcome back to This Week in Money.
Well, thanks for having me back, Jim.
Eric, since early May, you've talked about gold and mining shares correcting into late August. It was a good call. What are you expecting gold and mining shares to do now?
Yeah, that outlook was part of a much bigger overall scenario that I painted for metals based on a lot of the longer-term cycles and some key indicators and wave structure that I've looked at in gold. And my two-year outlook was for a pretty decent bull market in gold and silver from late 2022 into late 2024, with the first major phase being from late 2022 into a peak in late 2023, right around late October, early November. So that was kind of the backdrop for my 2023 outlook. Seeing gold and silver moving higher on balance from that fourth quarter of 2022 into the fourth quarter of 2023. But as I constantly stress to my readers, that does not mean you have just a solid uptrend for that whole time. In fact, very often in markets like gold and silver, only a minority of their overall uptrends are up movements. And by that I mean you could see 3 or 4 weeks of strong uptrend and then consolidation for 3 months. And then 3 or 4 weeks of a breakout move to the upside and then another 2 or 3 months of sideways trading. And so just, you know, to be specific, looking for a low late last year, high late this year, a lot can happen in between that. And one of those things was, I explained it in throughout April and leading into early May, that gold and silver were heading into what I thought would be a 3 to 6 month peak then. And the next important multi-month low looked like, from that vantage point and pretty much ever since then, looked like it would come into play in the second half of August, which is where we've just hit now. In order to validate or corroborate that scenario, there was specific price action I needed to see, and gold and silver just in the last 2 days have finally fulfilled that, and one of the key things was to see them spike below the lows that they saw in late June. And there were some primary reasons for that. One is a weekly trend indicator that I use. When we rallied into mid-July, they couldn't turn that indicator up. It said, okay, you need to go back down and you need to retest the low. Another is the overall wave structure that just said we should see an elongated ABC correction from that early May high. So I don't want to get everyone's eyes to glaze over or ears to glaze over as I'm explaining some of this. I actually have several reports that detail it and illustrate it. But the bottom line was that early May should be the highest point for probably 4 or 5 months, and that following that high, the lowest point of a correction was expected to be in late August, which is where we are now. And so there's a couple things setting up that I need to see gold and silver fulfill, and the XAU index is also right in lockstep with them. And that indicator has kind of moved along, has reverberated on such a consistent interval of time, this 23-week cycle that has governed it for a couple years now. And that particular cycle also said to look for a low just after mid-August, ideally between the 17th and the 24th of August. So we're right there now. All of these markets have reached the price targets that they had to the downside. So you've got that reinforcing the overall outlook. And now I just need to see a couple of key indicators kick in that would tell me a bottom is intact and the next move up is starting to take hold. And some of these indicators have already shown me where I think the most likely interval of time, a 3 to 4 week period, that an accelerated move to the upside is most likely. And that's what I'm always looking for in the markets, is where I can try and get in before those sharper moves happen. Take advantage of them and often get back out at the culmination of those.
You've also talked about the U.S. dollar rallying into the same time periods as gold. What do you see ahead for the U.S. dollar?
The dollar has been tracing out what I think will end up being a multi-year topping phase. I've talked about this with you before, but on a long-term basis, after we saw the pullback into early 2021 in the dollar, it looked like it had one more major upside move and that would complete a 14 to 15 year uptrend from the bottom that the dollar index set in 2008. And the price targets that I had for that up move were at 110 to 113 in the dollar index, levels that it hit late last year. So most of my upside price potential was fulfilled. And then it was just a matter of waiting for cycles to roll over and begin to turn down. And that's what I was looking for in the latter part of 2023 and then through 2024 and even into some key cycle lows that I've described that are out a couple years from now. But I think that this latest rebound we saw in the dollar has just reinforced that whole scenario, because I explained for the last 3 months, kind of in concert with this outlook for gold, that after the dollar saw one final drop into mid-July, that the most ideal scenario to reinforce all of my outlook for the next half or the next part of 2023 would be to see the dollar index rally up into the two-week period between August 14th and the 25th, between that Monday and the ensuing Friday, and set a multi-month peak in that time frame, ideally right around August 17th to the 21st. And so the dollar has been fulfilling that. That's one of the things that has helped keep a lid on gold and silver over the last few weeks. It has also reinforced the outlook that I had for Bitcoin and some of these other related markets to see some selling in here. And I think that the dollar is coming right into that time frame when it could set another lower high. And if it does that without my weekly trend indicator turning positive, and if it prevents a couple of other indicators from turning positive, right now they're just in neutral territory, that would set up for another sell-off in the dollar, reinforcing the potential for gold to see a pretty good rally. I think that's probably going to be tied into the interest rate outlook. But I think that the dollar is showing signs of vulnerability. It just hasn't quite reached the time when a more significant sell-off is most likely.
Since early this year, you've written about a dangerous time for stocks beginning in late July. How long could this dangerous time period last?
Well, at the very least, I was looking for a sell-off in stocks from late July, early August into the same late August time frame. And depending on what they did in that sell-off, again, some of these indicators that I use that tell me either it was a sharp correction or it was the start of a bigger, broader decline, depending on what those indicators do and some related markets, we could set a 1 to 2 month bottom in the next week or so, or it could just be an initial low followed by a bounce and then something more significant. But right now it looks like we should see a bottom between August, probably 18th to the 24th, and then see a rally in some of the indexes back up towards their 2023 highs. But at the same time, there continues to be a pretty good divergence where the index that I've really focused on for the sell-off has been the Russell 2000, and that just continues to trace out not only a topping formation, but a formation that's indicative of a B-wave rally, kind of after you get your initial sell-off, and then you get this often extended rebound consolidation that's where you really have the battle between the bulls and the bears. After you've seen what could be the final peak in a market, but that next rebound, after you get initial sell-off, that next rebound is the one that often creates the most confusion for bulls, saying, okay, is this just we had another correction, now we're ready to head back to higher highs, and the bears kind of saying, okay, that sell-off we had did more damage than previous sell-offs, and we're actually evolving into a bear market, and so this rebound is a point to sell. You get that back-and-forth battle going on, and I think you see that more in some indexes than in others, and the Russell 2000 is one of those. So that was one I was focusing on for a more convincing sell-off in the month of August, and it is nearing its initial downside target, so that should also help me determine what I expect moving forward. But I kept focusing on really next week, the week of August 21st to the 25th, that's the trading week, as being a time when you could see some pretty significant shifts in a lot of these markets, and that even there's chance for what I've described as a geopolitical surprise outside the markets due to a lot of corresponding cycles linked to some bigger geopolitical events.
The energy markets are following your cycle scenario. Do you still see more upside into mid-September?
Yeah, I do. I do. Ever since the May and June lows in the oil markets, my outlook has been to see another rally into mid-September. You actually have pretty significant cycles that are likely to peak in September of 2023. But as part of the rally into that time frame, I was looking for a surge into mid-August, a bit of a pullback, and then another rally up into that time frame. But the interesting thing to me has been that whereas you've had the crude and the products leading that rally, now you've got natural gas going through, or actually coming out of a bottoming phase and starting to enter a bit more bullish phase, where it could be the one seeing the more significant rallies over the next 1 to 2 months, and even at some specific periods in that time frame. So I do think that the energy markets still have some more upside after we complete the current corrective phase.
What about the mid-September Bitcoin cycles you described in your June report?
They are still a pretty significant time frame for me. Mid-September and then early to mid-November are two key cycles that I'm focused on in Bitcoin. They're actually opposing cycles, whereas mid-September, I think, should be an intermediate high and lead to a sell-off into early to mid-November. But the June report that you referenced there, a special issue of what I call the bridge, described why I thought that cryptos would see a rally from mid-June into mid-July. Then we should see a sell-off into this same time frame that I'm talking about in all these markets, kind of between August 17th, 18th, and August 25th. I've been looking for Bitcoin and Ethereum, Ether, to spike a bit lower. They've been consolidating for a couple of weeks, and I think we have an additional spike low still in the cards before an intermediate bottom is set. But depending on how low they go, and I've described where I think both of them should go on the downside before we set a late August low. But depending on where that bottom is formed, that will have a strong bearing on what to expect in mid-September, and even more so what to expect in what could be another significant sell-off between mid-September and early November.
In past interviews, you noted that Bitcoin seems to follow the S&P. Is it still following the Standard & Poor's index?
It has followed stock indexes in general. It's funny, often there was quite a time frame there in 2021, early 2022, where it was even a little more in lockstep with the Russell 2000 that I was just discussing a few minutes ago. And so it has certainly had a general correlation to them. And you know, there's different factors that impact that. There's inflationary expectations, interest rate expectations, fear of a future recession based on those interest rate and inflation expectations. So a lot of the similar general fundamentals, when there's not something specifically crypto-related impacting those markets, then it's more like following what the big tide is doing. And so you definitely still have that correlation. That doesn't mean that the extremes are set at similar magnitudes, like just because the stock market is setting, say, three successive higher highs, Bitcoin and cryptos might be setting highs at the same time frames, but they may be horizontal or parallel highs. They may be descending highs. So you get the magnitude of the moves are what differs or diverge, even if the time frames for those turning points are very similar. So this idea of the August sell-off in stocks and in cryptos, that has certainly been in lockstep with one another, and the idea for a final spike low of this corrective phase is also, and I do see some equity markets as well as the energy markets also setting peaks in mid-September, so that does also follow closely with when I think we'll see the next intermediate high in Bitcoin and the cryptos. So all that to say, yes, there is a pretty strong correlation as far as the timing of moves and the general direction of those moves. It's the magnitude of those moves that sometimes differs significantly.
Are there any weather or cosmic cycles we should be concerned about right now?
Well, I continue to watch solar cycles, sunspot cycles, and some broad weather climate cycles, but so many of them are much broader and multi-year, sometimes even longer term than that, that a narrowing it down to a specific couple weeks or even a month of when to be on higher alert, that's far more difficult and lower probability proposition. There are one or two time frames I'm looking at later in the year when I'm going to be focused on kind of sunspot solar cycles. But as far as just general weather cycles, there's nothing in the immediate future that I'm really focused on.
Eric, how can listeners get more information about Inside Track and the Weekly Relay?
Well, the best source for all kinds of information, samples, and explanation of our various publications and subscriptions, you can get it all at insidetracktrading.com. That's inside with the extra I in the middle, so it's INSIIDE, tracktrading.com. And then also contact us through there for any additional information or answered any questions.
Eric, thank you so much for being on This Week in Money.
Thank you for having me back, Jim. Always a pleasure.
My guest has been Eric Haddock, CEO and President of InsideTrackTrading.com. And that wraps up our show for this week. We'd like to thank our guests, Ross Clark, Gerald Celente, and Eric Haddock. And thank you for listening. If you have any questions for the show or our guests, you can send them to info@HowStreet.com. Now stand by for a company showcase update from Recyclico CEO Zarko Masalgia. I'm Jim Goddard. We'll be back next week with more This Week in Money.
Comments made on This Week in Money are an expression of opinion only and should not be construed in any manner whatsoever as recommendations to buy or sell any financial instrument at any time. Archived online at talkdigitalnetwork.com. This Week in Money is a production of How Street Media Incorporated. Executive producer is Tom Allen. Welcome to Company Showcase, an advertising feature on HowStreet.com.
I'm Jim Goddard. I'm speaking with Zarko Masalgia, CEO of Recyclico. Welcome back to Company Showcase.
Thanks for having me, Jim.
What's new at Recyclico?
Well, earlier this month, we did announce our collaboration with Nanoramic, which involves testing their innovative cathode electrode material. And actually, earlier this year, Nanoramic also entered into a collaboration with GM. And their collaboration with GM actually specifically focuses on kind of the joint development and application of Nanoramic's proprietary material as the electrode material for future EV lithium ion batteries. And their target is to improve EV battery cost, efficiency, and sustainability. And really where we fit in, or, you know, like all battery manufacturing processes, there is scrap material that's generated, and that's where we fit in with our collaboration, right? Nanoramic is actually going to contribute its scrapped electrodes, which are NMP-free and PVDF-free, which is a component of the cathode material or traditional cathode materials. And we're going to be testing their scrap material through our recyclical process. Now, for those of you who don't know, NMP is used as a solvent in the manufacturing of almost every lithium-ion battery currently in production. And it is a critical component of electrode manufacturing. The drying and handling of this material can actually account for almost 48% of the energy consumption in battery manufacturing. So with that in mind, and you know, thinking about all the regulations kind of coming into effect around the world and potential bans on these materials and lithium-ion batteries, you know, we see Nanoramic as potentially being able to provide a solution to future battery manufacturing. And with that, Recyclico, of course, is a few steps ahead in testing the recyclability of these next-generation materials, right? You know, we always think, I get messages from listeners of, news they're reading up on and different kinds of batteries out there that are announced, you know, how's our recycling process, how's this going to affect our recycling process or business model? And these are some of those examples of where we're really kind of on the, you know, leading edge of things and always testing the next generation and being sure that our process can continually innovate and handle future materials used in lithium-ion batteries. So with that, you know, we've already received samples of Nanoramic scrap material, and we'll be comparing the recycling efficiency relative to some of the conventional materials that we've processed and reporting that back to Nanoramic. But as another topic, I have received a number of questions in regards to our AGM date and why we are not holding it during the usual time of year. So as many of you know, last year we did a name change from American Manganese to Recyclico Battery Materials. And with this, we also did a change of business from a mining issuer to an industrial issuer. However, the Securities Exchange requires a shareholder vote to approve this change of business. And this shareholder vote would occur during the AGM. Now, the change of business is an obvious move given the shift the company has made from, you know, a mining focus to recycling, you know, since 2016. But as everyone knows, the change of business is a very intensive process that includes a number of documents, which our lawyer is working on. Now, you know, this is the way it is. I mean, these are regulations set by the Securities Exchange that does require approval from their end of all necessary documents before we can move on to scheduling an AGM date. Fortunately, we are at the end stage of this process, and we'll set a date once we get the final approval of all documents. So we're nearing that end stage, or we're at that end stage, and we'll provide updates as we continue. But to answer the multiple questions I've been getting, I thought it'd be easier to do it here on the podcast. And then in recent news, what I was reading is, you know, we saw Ford partnering with the South Korean cathode company EcoPro and the South Korean battery manufacturer SK On to build a new $1.2 billion battery cathode factory in Quebec. Now, this is a significant investment in Canada's battery supply chain, and I believe another opportunity for Recyclico to integrate its technology and directly recycle and supply cathode precursor and lithium hydroxide materials within that supply chain, right? Because they'll be making cathode materials, and with that, you're going to need precursor and lithium hydroxide. What really caught my attention when I was reading this news was that this battery cathode factory joint venture was confirmed to have been in the works for 3 years. Now, hindsight is 2020, and this may seem like a really smart move and obvious investment in the growing industry, but these negotiations, as you can see, take time and foresight, especially when making long-term investments, right? Like I can only imagine the management teams on each end and the discussions that they were having and, you know, the size of the facility, the investment amount, you know, going through the technical due diligence, the business due diligence, like all of those things have to align. And, but it's really great to see that it's happening now. And this is something I've always talked about and something to keep in mind as billions of dollars are floating around for projects yet to be announced. You know, I've been monitoring companies across the whole industry, especially our competitors. And really what I've noticed is certain struggles with certain business models that really, I believe, you know, especially the ones that really focus on going big right out of the gate, right? In better market conditions, I think they were able to raise billions of dollars, but to date, they've also spent billions of dollars with, you know, some not much to show for, and worse market conditions now as well. Meanwhile, the industry has also shifted underneath them, and now with so much money raised and such large teams, it's really hard to be flexible. So something, you know, we really stick to in our business model and being more nimble, more strategic in our outlook on how we're going to expand. You know, now that we have the first JV, looking at JV 2, 3, and 4 and multiple more to come, where, you know, we're strategically planning for these things and making sure that, you know, there's sufficient supply and capital that that can go into these expansion plans. Now, Jim, on one final topic, I just have a bonus topic to talk about. Recyclico will be an exhibitor at the Fully Charged Live event in Vancouver. It's going to be from September 8th to 10th, and I'll be speaking on one of the panels. For those listeners that, you know, been listening for a while, I think you'll remember we were at the Fully Charged event in Austin, Texas, back in 2020. I think it was a great show. I'm just really happy to see that they are expanding now and coming to Vancouver, just here in our backyard. It's going to be really easy for us as well with no travel. But as exhibitors, we were also given 20 guest tickets to give away. And these tickets will be valid for the entire duration of the event. So they're going to have electric cars there. They're going to have all sorts of stuff, all sorts of different panel discussions, you know, test drives. So for those of you local or potentially going to be in the area, if you're interested in attending and you're a listener of this podcast, you know, just send us an email at investorservices@recyclico.com. So that's investorservices@recyclico.com. And somebody will be distributing the codes on a first-come, first-served basis until they're all gone. So we only have a limited number to give away. But yeah, hope to see some of our listeners in person as well, if you're able to make it.
Sarco, for people new to Recyclico, what's the company all about and where can they find shares?
Yeah, Recyclico is a battery materials company focused on the recycling and upcycling of lithium-ion battery waste into high-value battery-grade precursor cathode active materials and lithium hydroxide or lithium carbonate that can go back into making new lithium-ion battery cells. And you can find out more on our website at www.recyclico.com. And we are traded on the TSXV under the ticker symbol AMY. We're traded on the OTCQB under AMYZF and the Frankfurt Stock Exchange under ID4.
Zarko, thank you so much for the update.
Thank you, Jim.
My guest has been Zarko Masalgia. He's the Chief Executive Officer of Recycleco Battery Materials. Our conversation took place on August 18th. I'm Jim Goddard.
Comments made on Company Showcase are an expression of opinion only and should not be construed in any manner whatsoever as recommendations to buy or sell any financial instrument at any time. Archived online at HowStreet.com. Company Showcase is a production of How Street Media Incorporated.